This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. I'm ready to warn the listeners ahead of time that some of the comments I'm going to make today might sound a little negative, because there are certainly some views coming out which are not particularly positive. And the first little snippet that I want to tell you about is the fact that a soldier was seriously injured yesterday due to rocket fire that came from Lebanon towards the Har Dov area, just south of the Lebanese border in Israel. We're told that the soldier was taken to the Rambam Hospital in Haifa, where he had to undergo some surgery and is apparently hospitalized in intensive care. When they say a soldier is seriously injured, it means quite seriously injured. So we obviously are praying for the safety of that soldier, whose identity has not been revealed. But the slightly kind of negative comment that comes out about this is the fact that the north of Israel has undergone significant rocket fire and drone fire over the last 10 or so months since October the 7th. And because of the fact that so many of the residents of northern Israel have been moved out of that area, we are fortunate that we are not having to report many casualties. We have had casualties, like the soldier, for example. But in the main part, we haven't been forced to report many casualties as a result of this. However, quite a lot of damage has been caused to northern Israel, including rockets and drones that have found their targets on military bases or near to military bases or military installations, as well as civilian areas in northern Israel. And many of the residents of northern Israel are saying, why has the IDF not dealt with this particular threat already? In other words, why is it only when a drone hits a building in Tel Aviv and kills somebody in Tel Aviv that we suddenly hear about it and we have these massive retaliations? Why has that not already been undertaken up until now, when many of the drones and the missiles that have been fired from Lebanon and from elsewhere have really been finding targets in northern Israel, causing damage, even causing some injury? People have been killed as a result of that in northern Israel. It doesn't seem to receive the same headlines. And I think the simple answer is that quite a lot of the rocket fire that comes from northern Israel that has caused damage has been, as I've described before, more short-range rocket fire, like anti-tank missiles and rocket-propelled grenades, which are very, very short-distance weapons used against Israel, and which we know we don't have an answer to. Admittedly, there have also been drone strikes, explosive drones, similar to the one that we saw striking Tel Aviv at the end of last week, that have also found their targets. There is a certain feeling that we don't have enough of a response to be able to protect ourselves against those types of drones. We do have the anti-missile systems, including the Iron Dome and including the Arrows and including the David Sling, and we have a whole host of anti-missile systems. The drones, it seems, are more difficult to track and to shoot down, which is why yesterday when I spoke about the drone, or the day before when I spoke about the drone that hit the target in Tel Aviv, it was important for us to know that, in fact, it had been detected and potentially could have been shot down if the right decisions had been made. So at least we feel like we do have some level of protection against that, that it didn't come in undetected and something that we couldn't protect ourselves against. But it does seem that the drone strikes are simply more difficult to be able to detect and shoot down. And residents of the north, even though many of them are not actually physically in the north of Israel right now, have said, especially on Friday when we had all that publicity and, of course, the response against Yemen, why has this not been done before? And one other thing that I would add is, of course, that the IDF has been very active in targeting sources of fire in Lebanon, even quite deep into Lebanon, in order to try somehow to reduce the number of rockets and to reduce the attacks that are coming from across the border, in spite of those strikes that the Air Force in the main part have been carrying out against Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. We still seem to get quite a steady stream of rockets and drones that are being fired from the north. And so people are saying, we need to ramp things up. We need to do something a little bit different, a little bit more, in order to somehow stem the tide. Of course, the listeners will be able to draw their own conclusions, but I do have a certain sympathy for residents of northern Israel who haven't lived in their homes for more than 10 months, who yesterday were told that they will not start the school year on the 1st of September with the rest of the country, despite the fact that a few months ago
I remember you reporting on this.
Yesterday they were told that there's no possible way that by the 1st of September they will be back in their homes to begin the school year. Many of them travel from time to time just to check on their houses. The state of things in northern Israel is not particularly good. And so they feel a little abandoned at this time, as they live in temporary accommodation and are not really able to get on with their lives, are concerned about their properties and their livelihoods in the north of Israel. Almost a year has gone by where they have been effectively internal refugees because they haven't been able to live in that area.
Yeah, so this whole idea of displaced people, refugees, I can't imagine that, you know, that they're refugees. But that aside from the discussion, the frustration, although enormous, I'm not sure the criticism is 100% fair, given that there are attacks on on Lebanon and Syria almost daily. From Israel. And yes, there was one attack on Yemen, but this is occurring every single day, pretty much, into Lebanon and to those areas. So I certainly hear the frustration. It must be enormous, beyond anything I can understand, but it doesn't mean that necessarily is fair criticism. Let's just talk about the Prime Minister's visit to the U.S., because a lot of controversy around it. It's, you know, to keep track of this, you really need a very good spreadsheet.
So I don't have a very good spreadsheet, but I try to keep track of it nonetheless. And let's start from the very beginning. The whole idea of the Prime Minister going to the U.S. at this time was considered to be controversial, because a lot of people feel that he should be staying home and managing the war. And more importantly, even than managing the war, is somehow engineering a hostage release deal of some sort or another. And every snippet of report that we receive suggests that we could potentially see a hostage release deal in exchange for 6 weeks of ceasefire or something thereabouts. The rest of the details are not that clear, but wherever we hear reports, especially from those who are directly involved in the negotiations, it seems as if though some sort of a deal may well be brewing soon. And in fact, yesterday, the Prime Minister was quoted as saying exactly that the time is ripe for a hostage deal to be done. That's what he was telling families of hostages yesterday in the United States. So he is even sending out a positive message, even though he's telling hostage families in the U.S. rather than telling them in Israel. And that's one of the criticisms. Why is it that he needs to go to the U.S. in order to meet families of hostages? He should be doing it right here in their homes, in his office, right here in Israel rather than in Washington. Another criticism that has come of the Prime Minister is the plane that he used to travel to the United States. This is now the new prime ministerial/presidential plane that Israel has commissioned, and I believe that Prime Minister Netanyahu is finally using for the first time. The plane is called Wing of Zion, Knaf Zion, that's the name, instead of the equivalent of Air Force One. It is Wing of Zion, and this is the plane that is cost the Israeli taxpayer a lot of money, a Boeing 767 that has been converted for use by the Prime Minister and to allow a traveling entourage of journalists and others to travel in the plane with him. Of course, he has his boardroom and his facilities in luxurious conditions up front the plane, and everybody else travels at the back of the plane in fairly kind of standard regulation seating. So the plane itself and the cost has also been controversial. Of course, he landed in the US to discover that President Biden couldn't meet with him on Monday as was planned, but that has now been rescheduled to tomorrow. So apparently the presidential meeting, and I believe that Kamala Harris may well be joining that meeting, will be held tomorrow at the White House in Washington. And then on Friday, he will travel to Florida to meet at Mar-a-Lago with Donald Trump, who has sent out a message on X saying that at Bibi Netanyahu's request, he will be meeting with him on Friday at Mar-a-Lago. Apparently, the hostage families who have traveled with him have been invited to attend for those who wish to do so. Arrangements have been made for those who wish to return to Israel before Shabbat to return back. They won't be continuing with the prime ministerial entourage to Florida, but those who wish to attend apparently have been invited to do so. Noah Argamani, the former hostage who was rescued recently, has been at the center of some of the comments, and she made an interesting comment that one of the lowest moments that she felt during her time in captivity was when she heard a radio broadcast while being held hostage, where Prime Minister Netanyahu was quoted as saying that this war is going to take a long time. And she said when she heard that, she just felt her spirits disappear, drop completely out of the bottom of her body. She was so disappointed by that. And that is after two of the hostages who were held with her were actually killed in front of her eyes. She witnessed that. She could feel this kind of possibility that you won't survive, very, very real. So she went through some very, very low periods during the time that she was in captivity. Another negative news item coming out around the Prime Minister's visit to the United States is this letter that has been released and sent to congressional members, released and signed by quite a number of senior Israeli officials or former officials, people who have served in the security forces and in other senior roles in Israel, who've written to members of Congress criticizing the Prime Minister, saying that his intentions have to be doubted, that he is potentially not acting in the best interests of Israel. And it's a very, very negative letter indeed. So I'm warning listeners that they will be able to see this all in the public area. This has come from within Israel. It's not particularly optimistic. It does cast a shadow over the Prime Minister's intentions, over the way that he's been managing the war, over the way that he's been managing any potential hostage release agreement, and does doubt his true intentions as to whether he's acting in the best interests of Israel or whether he is preferring to somehow ensure his own political survival. So that has also come out very, very negatively indeed. Interestingly, Eli Bibas, the grandfather of children Ariel and Kfir, who is still awaiting news of his son and his daughter-in-law and his grandchildren who were captured into Gaza on October the 7th, has sent a picture with the Prime Minister to the United States. And the picture that he sent is a drawing that Ariel made at his kindergarten and brought home. And it's a drawing of Batman, because apparently Ariel was really crazy about Batman. Ariel will turn 5 in 2 weeks' time. His brother Kfir turned a year old earlier this year. They remain in Gaza somewhere unaccounted for. And Eli Bibas decided that he would like to give this to the Prime Minister to present to President Biden as a reminder of his grandchildren and, of course, his son and daughter-in-law, who still remain somewhere captured in Gaza, unaccounted for, and we have no idea of their fate at the moment. On a more positive side to the Prime Minister's visit to the United States, it's interesting that he will become the very, very first world leader ever to address Congress four times. Today will be his address to Congress. Mm. And that will be the fourth time that Prime Minister Netanyahu has addressed Congress or will be addressing Congress, and will also mean that it is the 10th time that a leader of the State of Israel will address Congress. So that's also a record, because I think that only, I believe it's France, is actually the leaders of France have addressed Congress 9 times. But now Israel will be appearing in front of a joint session of Congress for the 10th time. Interestingly, British leaders, including Winston Churchill and the late Queen Elizabeth, have spoken to Congress only 8 times. And in fact, Winston Churchill himself addressed Congress 3 times. So, and this will be the fourth time by Prime Minister Netanyahu, and it'll be very interesting to hear what he has to say, and in particular, what potential impact this will have on the situation, because it's all fine and well for him to go to Congress and to make public announcements and to tell Congress things that we probably all already know. The question is, will this really make a difference? And that, I think, will be the measure of the success or failure of this trip, is if it results in something concrete. Will it result in release of our hostages, which really for now is of primary importance? Will it result in some sort of an arrangement to bring the war to an end, to weaken Hamas further, to deal with Hezbollah and the Houthis? These are the unanswered questions which we'll be looking for answers to.
And we certainly will follow that up tomorrow. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45 for the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Hi, it's Barry Cohen from the Blue Agency. Israel is currently facing one of its biggest challenges ever. All of Klal Yisrael is praying for the safety of our soldiers and the return of the hostages. We hope and pray that our soldiers and security forces will prevail and that they will all return home speedily and triumphant. We hold the hands of our clients and friends who have children serving in Tzahal, who are protecting Israel and Jews around the world. May Hashem protect us all.